Welcome back, everyone. This is week 16 of the Guardian Project podcast. I am your host, Andy Flory, and at the pre-release this weekend, I learned that Fervent Champion has first strike when my 1-1 died blocking.
And I'm your co-host, Brian Leithead, and you can call me Lord on Eldran because I want to be royal.
That's a good song. I did think about that, and I thought at one point that I was going to use that as an intro, this, and I never wrote it down, and that reminds me of that.
Please listen carefully.
You don't know how hard...
That was a really good story.
...or long I was working on that mediocre intro.
I'm sure it was a long time.
Yeah.
Because working on these intros is sometimes real stressful. And I've had some really bad ones.
Yeah, anxiety gets the better of me. I'm like, I want these people to love me and I want them to think I'm funny.
Yeah, it's this week's was not as good as mine have been before, but it was real talk.
Mine have been all pretty consistently bad, so.
And this is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering.
Yes, it is.
What is on the agenda?
We have, so we submitted our Eldraine Bake Off yesterday.
Yes.
So we'll be talking a little bit about that. Then we're going to talk about how our Throne of Eldraine pre-releases went. Andy got to play while I got to work.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to touch a little bit on the MTG Play Any Deck event.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to kind of finish up with the Fandom Legends tournament that took place over on last weekend.
Yes, and before we do that, we have two quick items. One of them is we're officially on Google Play Music, so you can listen to us through Google Podcasts.
Google, I love it.
More Google, very exciting. And then the other thing that I want to talk about is something that is really relevant to today. The Throne of Eldraine Collector's Deluxe Edition came out and also sold out today.
Is anybody surprised by that?
No.
Not I.
Anybody surprised? Raise your hand. No one raised their hand here.
That's a visual gag. Got you.
What are your thoughts on this product? Honestly.
Like, you want me to reveal my opinion on the matter?
Yes. Because I'm not a huge fan of this one.
I think the price tag is way too high. That's like what you could buy the old ones on the secondary market for and feel fine. But
right.
$450 for essentially 16 packs and, I mean, yeah, you get a couple.
So you get 16 collector's boosters. So they're the special boosters that have the alternate frame.
Sure.
Some of them are borderless. You get a binder.
Ooh.
You get a binder. You get a foil Garrick borderless planeswalker, which you already have. You already have the ability to get in a pack.
Yeah.
You get a non-foil Kenrith, the Return King. That's the buy a box promo.
I believe you can. Can you get that in the collector's packs?
I don't. I would doubt it.
Yeah.
I think that's exclusive. But
yeah, okay,
you also get a 3x3 card strip of a foil sheet of Throne of Eldraine. So you can get a small little foil sheet. And then you get a MTG Mega Code card, which grants two things. So you get a digital Garruk sleeve, and then also you get a special art style of the following cards of each of the following. No, one copy of each of the following cards plus a special card style for each. So you get the Garrick, Charming Prince, the Magic Mirror, Witch's Vengeance, Bone Crusher Giant, and Questing Beast. So you get that for $449. That does not include tax
or shipping. If there is any.
Yeah, or shipping if there is any. It sold out. I don't think as quickly. Not, I don't think it was within seconds. I cannot confirm, but it's already sold out. But the price tag was so high that the Wizards official account had posted that if people are having issues with their order, they should contact their credit card company or financial institution to get that sorted out. And I believe that's because those were being flagged as fraudulent charges.
Well, $450 to a website called Wizards. I don't blame the credit card companies.
Sure. No. I appreciate that. And we have safeguards in place for those exact reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But people were trying to order a product and they couldn't because the price was so obnoxious.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen so many of these collector's boosters opened and have heard the horror stories from friends that got one when they pre-ordered a box. They got one because these collector's boosters were scarce everywhere. Mm-hmm. Do you guys remember how many you got at your shop?
36, I think.
30. I heard one shop got 60. And they're a pretty large shop, but that's still not that many.
Right. It still has to do with your tier level.
Your tier level. Sure. And but so 60 is not that many. If someone buys a few boxes, they were getting a pack per box. And I've seen some that were open that were almost nothing. I mean, their foil special art was a common, the showcase border, and their extended art cards that they may or may not have. Is it guaranteed an extended art in those? I think it's still.
Yes.
I think it's guaranteed.
Yeah, and I think you get, you know, the extended, and, I'm sorry, the showcase is also
sure,
guaranteed.
And some of them were cards that are just not.
Yeah, know, I mean, any card in the site can be a
sure
extended promo. So,
I just don't know if, because you're not guaranteed in these ones. You know, 16 collector boosters.
Yep. It's not like it's like the Mythic Editions where you're guaranteed, what was it, 10 Planeswalkers?
You were guaranteed eight. Each of those. Yeah. But then you got 24 packs to go.
Exactly.
To go along with those. So
in this case, it was not like a box of chocolates. With the Mythic Editions, you knew what you were getting.
Right. And you could sell that box and you knew that at least if you bought it on the secondary market, you knew you were getting those 8 Planeswalkers and then random packs that you could draft with.
Exactly.
This I guess you could. Could you even do a draft? It's only 16 boosters.
I mean, you could do.
You could do a small. You can't even do an 8-man draft with these.
Yeah, it'd be a 4-man.
It'd be a 4-man draft.
You could have what, 4 packs per prize.
Sure. I just wanted to touch on this to see what your thoughts were. I did not buy it. I passed up on this one. I bought or attempted to every Mythic Edition previously. The only one that I didn't get was War of the Spark. That one sold out, my order was one that was...
Did you get your damage foil sheet?
I did, and then I complained and I got my non-damage foil sheet later. Actually, that was one of the first episodes we recorded, was right after
right.
that happened,
that's
because
right.
we talked
yeah.
about the damage sheets.
Yep.
I did get a damage sheet. We got the fixed one. It came in a wider shipping tube, so it was less rolled up, so I think there was less of a chance. But
well, that actually I think had more to do with the person rolling it, because you know they had to chip out what 1500 of those.
Oh, that's
or
a person rolling those. Aren't chip packed by
no
the...
It was, I believe it was somebody individually hand rolling them, because they had, I mean, they had to shove it into a tube anyway.
Sure. I didn't know if they were gonna, if the machine did that. Okay, well, that makes sense, and I'm sure someone was really busy and trying to get through a lot of them.
Correct, yeah.
And no, so I get it. No, I did. Yes, I did have a damaged one. I have a, I think guest host Mike Coyle, he had actually tried a few different orders, and a lot of them failed, but I think he got like 4 of the damage sheets because so many orders were failed.
Yeah.
And I think almost all of his were damaged as well.
Yikes. And I had 2, and then I got my 2 supplemental ones.
Sure.
So,
did you guys try to order one of these deluxe collections for the shop? Do you think this would even sell? If you brought this into your local game shop to sell, would someone buy this for you to make enough profit? And how much,
as of this afternoon, they were selling for $800 on eBay. That was selling, not,
yep.
you know, buy it now. That was actually selling for $800.
I was going to go to the price next. Yeah. I've seen some up there. No. It was a perfect segue. I've seen some up for, as like 2 hours ago, I saw one up for $689. So maybe that's a good deal at this point.
Probably. Yeah.
But I don't know who's buying these. But I'm assuming the thought is that if they can, they're looking for the highest price point they can get on a special edition, you know, bundle like this for the whales who are out there looking to buy these things. I thought at one point I might have been the target market, but clearly I am no longer the target market. I'm out now. I was willing to do the $250 for Planeswalkers and the packs because you can draft it and you're guaranteed that.
Sure, yeah, and then they just look cool.
And they look cool. You can use them in Commander. This I was not comfortable with, but I mean, do you think we're going to get some of these for... I assume we're going to get one with every set now. So is Theros going to be alternate of the previous gods? Who knows if they're going to bring all the gods back? Is Zendikar going to be a bundle that's $1,000 that has guaranteed 10 expedition lands? I mean, it's the land
or
set.
Or all of the Eldrazi Titans.
Yeah, maybe it's got the Eldrazi Titans that...
All 6 of them.
That what?
All 6 of them.
Yeah, yeah,
well,
it could have,
you know, 2 iterations.
The 2 iterations of both. Right. So I wonder where this is going. I'm not the target market anymore. This is just too rich for me.
You've ascended from, you know, casual fan to...
I thought I was the target market for these things. I was, but this one, no thank you. So
no bueno.
Anyway, Those I wanted to touch on those before we started. So the Great Eldraine Bake Off was really fun. So we submitted our submission yesterday. So I sent that in yesterday, and you can find that on Twitter.
And
Instagram.
We have a new Instagram account.
Freshly instituted Instagram.
It's so fresh. It's new and instant because.
I thought you were going to go somewhere with fresh food, like the pie we made.
No.
Nope.
I'm not on that level of thinking today. Oh, it's been a long day.
Okay. So you can check out our photos on Twitter. So we made an apple pie titled Apply Ever After. That was Brian.
Ooh.
I was like, we need to have a play on words for this. And he's like, Happily Ever After? I said, oh, Apply Ever After. So you can check that out. His wife, Angela, I made the dough. I pretty much baked most of the stuff. Brian came up with the title and Angela cut out the, by hand, the actual logo or the set symbol for Throne of Eldraine.
Yep.
So, we pretty much gave her a picture and she just drew it out, cut it out, and then used a paring knife to cut pie.
Her art degree is finally coming in handy.
It is.
Yay! Well,
she is a sandwich artist by trade.
Correct.
Her family does own a cafe, and so their food is really good. But this was really good. She got to use the creative side of the food as well now.
Exactly. The food artist.
The food artist.
Not blood artist, the food artist.
So I learned how to bake an apple pie because of magic. So that I can... thank you, wizards. I've never...
Thanks for giving me life skills.
Life skills. I had never baked a pie. I didn't know what to do. And I wasn't going to go and buy a pie crust. Everything should have been made homemade is what our understanding was, or come up with your recipe. So I learned how to make dough. I think the other thing we learned is making a pie is not hard. It's really time consuming.
Because you have to,
and I made the dough before Brian and Angela came over that night because it said I have to make the dough and I have to refrigerate it for at least an hour. But then it fails to tell you that you also need to let the dough sit out and warm up for a bit because otherwise you cannot roll it out at all.
We tried punching it, taking a torch to it. Oh, it would not just, no.
Just had to hold it in our hands.
Yeah.
And please warm up. We really need to get you into the oven soon or it's going to be midnight soon.
In my hand again. Sorry, just through 90s, you know, dad rock. In my hand.
And so, also, friend of the show, Chef Petro, was on, and he also submitted his. I'm sorry, we could not compete with his level of
He's chef-ness. A professional chef, a master of his craft and beverage, as he so humbly has said.
He made a huge meal.
Yeah, and he tweeted and put it on Instagram, and we shared and retweeted it.
Yeah, so check out some of our stuff on our page as well, and you can find him on Twitter at Chef Petro D to see his thread. He had shots of the finished product and also the beginning, or like the actual action shots during the process,
the accoutrement and the mise en place.
So it looks it looks really good. You said that to impress Angela, didn't you?
I did.
So it looks delicious. Go tell him how awesome it looks. Go like his posts. So we had a really fun time doing that. So you can check that out and find more posts for everybody else who has participated with hashtag Eldraine Bake Off on Twitter. There's a lot of submissions. Some of them are really, really good.
Yeah. I'm glad that this was actually, honestly, in my opinion, one of the better promotions that they've ever done for a set.
Yeah. Community engagement here is off the charts.
Yeah. And it just brings out people's creative sides. It's like, you know, Angela, who works with food and doesn't even know anything about magic. We're like, hey, we need your help. We're beginners, you know? And she's like, awesome. I just like making food and let's do it.
She posted on Twitter, this Eldraine thing my husband and Andy do. That's what she goes, this is what we made, this Eldraine thing. So she has no idea what she did, but it was really...
When I kept saying Eldraine, I thought I was talking about like a sink or something.
Sure. So we had fun. Go check that out. And then speaking of Eldraine as well, this past weekend was the pre-release.
So ba-dum-bum-bum-bum.
I did get to play twice. So I played once on...
How lucky.
I know. I played once on Saturday and once on Sunday. And so the first draft or sealed event that I did had all blue and white rares. So I played the fairies that has the wish board. As the adventure, you pay 4 and you get to search for a card outside of outside of the game, so you can search your sideboard. I grabbed a basic land 2 times from that because nice. I needed lands. I was like color screwed, and I was like, I need another white mana right now. So I grabbed another land.
Yeah, that's the thing about this set is the mana is super weird.
Because you want to be in 2 colors, but you also want to be in 1 color for adamant.
There's like no dual lands whatsoever.
There are not.
Yeah.
No, but so I played with fairies. The fairy that has the instant. Yeah. The fairy that has pay 3 to counter a spell target or with CMC 3 or less, and then it's just a 2/2 of flying. That card's great. It's a counter spell and a creature.
Yeah.
For 5 mana.
Nice.
I did mill some people out with the Folio.
Oh, Nolio, you didn't.
Trying to think of the name of it. Folio of Fancy. So players have no maximum hand size. XX and tap it. Each player draws X cards. Or 2 and a blue, tap it. Each opponent basically mills for the number of cards in their hand. Well, I didn't know this was going to do as much work as it did. So, tap it once and they mill like 3. And then if they can't swing through, I found this is a really slow format. So the number of times that the board just got clogged up, there was nothing I could do. I couldn't get through. And I said, well, I guess I'll wait until the end of their turn and pay 8. We each draw 4.
Yep.
And then I would start milling him for 7 or 8. And the guy was like, oh, you're giving me a lot of cards. And I said, I know, but I don't know how I'm going to win if I don't. And I ended up having him draw out 2 times. So it wasn't even mill and he drew on his turn. I had him just draw so many that he had no more in his library. So Folio Fancies is great and limited. And then the second event that I did, I played a really strong black-red Knights deck. I ended up getting a sealed pool that was really strong. I had 2 Murderous Riders. I had a Clackbridge Troll. I had the knight that has the adventure for lose X life. Your opponent loses X life. You gain X life, where X is the number of knights you control. I got the knight that is based on the knight that is based. Hold on, I lost my place now. Oathsworn Knight, the one that resembles the Knights of Ni from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I got one of those as well. And then the equipment, the black red equipment that you can equip to a knight for less, and it gives a knight +2 or the creature +2/+2. So I had a lot of fun. I went 2-1-1 in the first event with the fairies, and I went 3-1 with the event playing with the knights.
They're knights. Is it nighttime?
It is nighttime.
Did you say that every time you played? It's nighttime.
It's nighttime. No, I wish I had. That's a really good tagline.
Do you just sit down? It's nighttime.
It's nighttime. No, but I think Murderous Rider is really, it's such a strong card. I had to hold it back, and I didn't realize I was losing 2 life every time I was doing it in the beginning. I was like, oh, I have to lose 2 life for this. But I did have someone who had a Murderous Rider when they were at 3 life, and I had out 2 of the Brimstone Trebuchets, the one that taps to deal 1 damage to your opponent, so they couldn't kill it because they would go down to 1 life.
Nice.
And they were like, well, I guess I have to play it and hopefully it lives. And then I Murderous Rider their Murderous Rider, so they couldn't they couldn't gain any more life back. So I think there's a lot of life swing as well in this format.
Oh yeah.
So
with all the food being made, all the consumed food,
and Bolt the Bird has never been more real, because that goose needs to go. Every time you see that stupid goose, you should still Bolt the Bird. Like Birds of Paradise,
Bolt the goose
needs to die.
The goose needs to not be loose.
That and Tempting Witch. I did lose to that a few times as well, where the goose will make the food and the witch will sack it and make you lose 3 life. They had that going on.
Oh, the cauldron, right?
Yeah, I think
It's not, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Tempting Witch. She has just pay 2, tap her, and then you sacrifice a food and your opponent loses 3 life. That, yeah. But when she enters, she also makes a food. She just comes in bringing food. She's holding the apple. She's like, I got this apple. You're going to lose 3 life in a second.
You're going to eat it.
But also the Queen of Ice, the Elsa card, let it go.
You can't say that. It's copywritten.
Let it, what's another word for go?
Flow.
Proceed. Let it proceed.
Let it flow. Let it flow.
So I was able to tap down with the Queen of Ice adventure two times. One on Gilded Goose and one on the Tempting Witch. I was like, you cannot tap and make more food or stack that food. So I had a lot of fun so far. Did you have any weird calls or anything while you were working it? Did you have much? It seemed pretty understandable for the most part.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I get more of how does flying work?
Oh, newer players. You see a lot of new players come out for these.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's the same kind of, it's like their first event, right? You know, mm-hmm. So kind of, you have to be understanding, and it's like, yeah, how does flying work? Well, it can attack through creatures that don't have flying, can't be blocked, except for if another, your opponent's creature has flying or reach, then they can block a creature. It's unblockable. Technically, no. Right. Okay, got it. It's unblockable. Okay, it's unblockable.
In this instance, with what's out right now, the answer is kind of
yeah,
yes.
You have to be careful with how you phrase things. Like, I can't say, yes, it's technically unblockable right now.
Sure.
Because they'll just think, oh, it's unblockable.
Yeah. No, that's hard. So, any crazy cards open? Did you guys see anybody opening any?
I mean, people were opening, you know, foil borderless, like Okos, nice. Stuff like that. Nothing. Honestly, with the amount of the sets that's going to be open, and, you know, call me a grumpy old man, but, like, I feel like there's nothing special that was really open in the set, and it's because it's like I'm immune to seeing, like, I deal with like masterpieces and stuff on daily, so like seeing, I'm not the person to ask that question, so I apologize.
Yeah, no, I guess you do see that stuff, because as soon as someone opens it, if they know they're not going to use it, they just bring it to you,
right? I think the borderless cards in the showcase cards are cool looking for sure. I'm more attracted to, I guess, like looking at the showcase cards just because they're more fairy tale inspired.
I agree.
The borderless, you already saw that with Ultimate Masters, buy a box, promo
the box
thing.
Toppers.
Box topper there. Thank you.
And so, the borderless planeswalkers as well that we've seen.
Yeah. I mean, they've always technically been a little bit borderless, right?
Sure.
But, yeah.
Yeah, no. So I had fun while Brian worked.
I still have PTSD from the weekend.
Yeah. And you can get burned out. I don't do midnight pre-releases. I do on the Saturday, I like to do the 10 a.m. And then on Sunday, I generally do like a noon. Because it can feel like your whole day. If you start at midnight and then you don't wake up till 11 o'clock, you lose your whole morning if you did that midnight. It's just, I'm not about that.
Yeah.
No,
we,
thank you.
Since Wizards started allowing us to sell product and have events as early as 3 o'clock on Friday, we just replace it with our F&M. So we do the 6 o'clock, no midnight, and then we do 2 p.m. the next day, and then 1 p.m. on Sunday. So we have three events during the weekend. We generally tend to get a lot of repeat business of people just playing in all three events. Mm-hmm. But we also get people who come play from like midnight. There are some people who play literally every event that they can, and it's,
there
I don't
are some
see
people
how they
that,
can do it,
yeah,
but
that's
just
it,
me. You
like,
know.
Some shops did it like a 6 o'clock, and then they did a midnight, and then a 10, a noon, and another like a 5 o'clock. And someone plays 7 pre-releases in a weekend.
That's too much.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Everything blends together. You don't remember what deck you were playing.
Right.
And no, it's fun. I love pre-release weekends, and I think that having the pre-releases earlier on Saturday or earlier on Friday and not having to wait for midnight is probably one of the better things that has happened
in a long time. Their reasoning was obviously that kids get out of school and they don't want to wait. You know, their parents don't want to drop them off at midnight and come pick them up at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever. So.
Right. And I also like that you can pick up your pre-ordered product earlier, and
yes.
I'm just waiting, maybe it'll be the next set. I don't see any reason why we can't just have a release weekend. Just this is release weekend, you can do a pre-release, but also buy all the crap you want, and you can sell it into the, you can trade it into store credit or sell it to the shop, and then someone like gets up from the table and can go buy that card because they knew that they wanted it and you just sold it. And
I mean, pre-releases and promos and all that stuff are almost as old as Magic itself, so it's still kind of a tradition, but I think it should just all be wrapped up into one weekend.
Right.
Because most stores that I know don't even host any like actual release events anyway, because people aren't showing up. They just want their product and go home or come back and play standard, whatever the case is.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think we'll see that. We're moving towards that. It looks like we're moving towards a release, with the fact that you can pick your product up early. Maybe it's just a matter of time in the next year, maybe in the next year, we see, okay, coming with this set, it's just going to be a release weekend. Maybe they'll have promos if you participate, something like that as well.
Yeah. Wizards is a pretty transparent company, and they sort of live or die by public opinion. So I think if we, you know, start getting that in the works, maybe they will just switch over to release weekend.
Right. And since we haven't had a release weekend, we kind of got one with the Play Any Deck event on Arena.
Ooh, good.
So we kind of got one. So we both participated in this. So last weekend, there was an event where you got a play set of every card that was legal and standard, and you could play up to 12 games. You can mix and match just to test out decks with cards that you obviously don't yet have or might not have had. So we both played in this event. So I'll have you go first. So what did you play, and maybe some things you saw or anything that stood out in particular that you weren't expecting?
I definitely didn't. So I played like a teamer mid-range slash control deck that my friend Ross had sent me. He had tested in the very early hours of that being, you know, free or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he said this deck he feels was very good. So I tested it out, and it slaps, let me tell you. It's it plays all the good cards in teamer colors. It plays Goose, it plays Hydra Crisis, it plays Niv-Mizzet out of the sideboard, and then we also play Rolesque, Incubation Druid, and Growth Chamber Guardian. So it's pretty aggressive, but plays a great mid-range game.
Did you play that all 12 games?
Yes.
Okay, you did.
Yeah.
And how you turned out there in the
I
end?
I think I was 10 and 2, you know, like they tell you to be at
10 and 2 driving.
Driver's training. The decks that I lost to were just other mid-range decks with better removal. So green-black I kind of struggled with. But I did beat up on the Simic deck a lot, the Simic ramp deck that is making the
Simic
rounds.
Simic ramp or Simic flash?
Simic ramp.
Okay, yeah. Simic flash deck. Ugh.
Very
annoying.
It's
still ugh.
Yeah.
I saw someone posted their deck name that they had posted, and I forgive me, I don't remember who had posted it on Twitter, but it was UG and then in parentheses an H for blue green. Ugh.
Nice.
Ugh, flash. Brazen Borrower just made that better. So you went 10 and 2 playing Bant.
Teamer.
Teamer, you're right. Yep, Teamer. I went 9-3 playing green-black, the Great Henge.
That was one of my losses, was to green-black.
It's not a deck that I would normally play. I found the list online. It seemed pretty standard for what I was looking at. A lot of people were talking about it. A lot of people saying if you're not playing the Great Henge, you're not doing it right. They said, you know, drawing a card after playing a creature.
What is a commander?
Yeah, right. What is this commander? That's a 9 CMC card.
Yeah.
But it's actually only 2 when you play it on turn 4. So on turn, I think the best play that I had was, so it plays Pelt Collectors, it plays Rotting Regisaur, it plays Questing Beast, Paradise Druid. So the best play that I had was turn 1 Pelt Collector, turn 2 Pelt Collector, and then just like a tap land. Turn 3 Rotting Regisaur. Rotting Regisaur is 7/6. It reduces the cost of the Great Henge by 7, so it costs green. So on turn 4, you play the Great Henge, and it taps for green. So you have 2 open mana, and you play the Questing Beast, and it comes in with a +1/+1 counter, and you swing for 17 that turn.
Well,
it's ridiculous, because then your Pelt Collectors got bigger. I felt like the deck was, in some of the matches, it just felt unbeatable. It's like, how does your deck beat this one? Or if I was playing another deck, how do I beat this? And the answer was generally removing the Rotting Regisaur, or in response to me discarding a card at my upkeep, bouncing it back to my hand, and then I really lost. I truly did lose a card. So I really like that deck, but I ran into 2 Simic flash decks, and those were the ones that would return something to my hand. So using Brazen Borrower to return the Rotting Regisaur to my hand, or they would return the Great Henge, which that is really the kind of the engine I needed. I need to play a creature to draw a card. And sometimes you would just chain into drawing like 3 creatures in a row. Questing Beast, really good card. I'm curious to see if that actually takes over with the deck at all.
It's going to be a house in standard.
It was, it pretty much gets into any Planeswalker deck, because a lot of the Planeswalker decks, even the Will and Rowan deck, that's really the draw your second card deck.
Yeah.
The blue-red draw your second card. Even that deck can't block the Questing Beast because it can't be... Creatures with power 2 or less can't block it. So that deck is making those fairies.
Yeah, it uses the I-Cup Pyromancer, whatever it's called. The ICUP.
ICUP. Isn't it Iron Craig Pyromancer?
That is that what it is?
Yeah, it's not the ICUP Pyromancer.
But no, I-Cup.
I-Cup Pyromancer. It plays that, which is 0/4, but then it plays the enchantment, the blue-red enchantment. It's like blue-red and one. Whenever you draw your second card, you can create like a blue fairy. And well, anyway, it can't block the Questing Beast. So any Planeswalker is going to get destroyed by Will and Rowan if it's expecting to chump block with tokens. That is
right.
So I really like that. But this weekend coming up, we have the win every card event. So the play any deck event was there to allow you to figure out what you wanted, what you thought was the best, and then you get all the cards again for an event where you can play up to 12 games. You can only play once and up to 2 losses. So as soon as you hit 2 losses, you're out. And it's got you can check online, we can post a link after to the event itself, but you get an alternate card sleeve for Arena of the Golden Egg, and then you get prizes based on your wins. And if you do get 11 wins, you get one of every card in Eldraine, and if you get if you do 12 wins, you get one of every card in Standard. So this is relevant because Brawl is coming out this month, so you can literally make every single Brawl deck that you could possibly want.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a really good value. Mm-hmm. So find that amazing deck, and if you get 12 wins, tweet at us or email us, because we want to know what you did it with. I'm hoping to take it down with Green Black. Don't know if that's the best deck, but I was playing Simic Ramp today because I just took, or Simic Flash today because I had the Simic Flash deck before. I literally just got 3 Brazen Borrowers to add to it, and I just felt like the deck actually just got better at rotation. It did not get worse.
Yeah.
It just got better. So,
yep.
Because you got a lot more unsummons now. And it's not even just on a creature, it's any permanent.
Yeah. Not only did you get an
unsummon. Non-land permanent.
Right. Not only did you get an unsummon, but you got a creature with it too.
A 3/1 flash flyer.
Yep.
Yeah.
What do you think is better, the Brazen Borrower or Murderous Rider? Like, if you're on a lonely island and you could only pick one to be your partner.
I would probably... This is a hard question, Brian, because I don't normally play black cards, but that green-black deck gets wrecked by Murderous Rider. But I normally play... This one's hard. I would probably say right now Brazen Borrower because of the Simic Flash deck, but maybe once the format is a little bit more solved, people figure out how to combat that, Murderous Rider will creep up a bit more. I liked Murderous Rider in Limited. So I'll say Murderous Rider because I have more experience with it so far.
Okay.
What do you think?
Brazen Borrower.
You think Brazen Borrower?
Yeah, I'm have a sort of bias because I've casted Vendalion Click so many times, and it literally has the same stats, and
yeah.
So Brazen Borrower. Plus it's unsummon is the best removal for blue, or best removal in blue. So why not?
Yeah,
because
you can do it on an enchantment, on an artifact, and it's instant speed, so end of someone's turn, return something that's gonna hurt you. Yeah, I mean, that was a hard question. Are you surprised I didn't pick the blue card? I picked the black card there. I normally would always pick the blue card.
Put it on the black card.
Maybe in a week, I would put my money on blue. We'll see after.
We'll see. Yeah.
We'll see after I play a little bit more.
Yeah.
Now that I have that deck. I don't have a Murderous Rider deck. It's not even played in the deck that I was playing.
Yeah.
I only have the experience because I held it physically in my hand and played it at the pre-release. And I was also playing in a limited event and not in a constructed event.
Right.
So.
Okay, fair enough.
So if you had, though, to pick a deck today, based on what we talked about, what you've seen, even things you might not have played for this upcoming weekend, what would you play?
Golos Ramp.
Would you really?
Yeah.
With Field of the Dead and just hope to get in zombies?
I'm such a sucker for ramp decks. Like, I played red-green ramp when it was legal on Battle for Zendikar because I just wanted a ramp to Ulamog.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, did the Golos ramp deck get anything new? Or is it just still real good?
I mean, it got Realm Cloak Giant.
Oh, now, yeah, you're right. Destroy
and Once Upon a Time.
Destroy. Once Upon a Time is a really good card.
Yeah, they're talking about that's going to break open Modern, so we'll see.
Yeah, so I didn't think it was going to be that good, but on turn one when you don't do anything, and then turn two you don't do anything because you're just dropping lands waiting for your three drop, you just do it at instant speed at the end of their turn because you can do it at the end of their turn.
Correct.
Yeah. It's so good. I drafted one of those today on Arena, and I didn't know how good it was going to be. It's really
good. Turns out real good.
Turns out it's a fantastic card. Oh, that's the other card that the Simic Flash deck got, or at least the one that I was playing. You play three. I played three copies of Once Upon a Time.
Oh,
because
sure,
it helps
yeah.
you grab a creature or you grab that land that you need, because that deck needs a lot of double blue and a lot of double green.
Yeah, I mean, you're a draw go deck, so generally you really aren't doing things in the first couple turns anyway. Mm-hmm. You're just responding what your opponent does.
Yeah, except for the pirate, the flash pirate, spectral.
Oh, spectral sailor.
Spectral sailor. But even then, I just waited and I said, "Well, I'll cast the Once Upon a Time and then spectral sailor after that." So,
sure.
I feel like I would probably play the Simic Flash deck if it were me right now. Well, that's the one I feel like is going to do better once Standard is solved. But I guess I'd probably still play the green black deck. I still think it's going to do really well.
Green black is just good color combination,
and it's the first kind of mid-rangey deck that I don't normally play a mid-range deck. It's not really.
I love mid-range. Yeah,
I feel like I play aggro. I normally just play aggro or I play control, which is complete opposites.
Yeah,
but sometimes I want to be able to have a quick 8 minute round and then I can go eat snacks, or I want to play until we go to turns and I get the most out of my $5 at FNM.
What is a harder archetype to play? Control or aggro?
I would say...
Aggro.
I would say aggro is a lot more difficult. Yeah.
People always give crap to aggro decks because they're so easy to play, quote-unquote, but math is hard.
Math is hard, but you also have to expect... I always expect the worst. When I'm playing against whatever is in someone else's hand and they've got open mana, I was like, oh, you could flash something in, you could counter, you could bolt.
Yeah, at that point, you just have to figure out play patterns, and it's like, oh, he would have done it on this.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's just, I would say aggro's a lot more difficult, but I would say if you're playing a control deck against an aggro deck, it's playing control is much more difficult because... Unless you get to the mana you need to either board wipe, bounce, or slow them down, you just panic. You're like, well, I can't counter anything. They played every single thing they had out on turn two. So this counter spell doesn't really matter anymore.
Yeah, I think playing control against aggro can be easy. You just have to target the sequence your spells correctly, which is obviously easier said than done. But
I think control is a really difficult archetype to play.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
I feel like I play it in Commander more than I should. And I'm not trying to play control, but I find that I do it a lot more than I realize.
What did you people do to Andy? Quit making him play control.
What did you do to me? I have two blue-white decks. I should not have two blue-white decks that are literally bounce everything back and counter things. I took apart a mono-blue deck because it's not fun. Don't play mono-blue. Don't play mono-blue Baral. That deck is not fun.
You did that to be spiteful, though.
I did that one time, yes. But yep. Now, no, I'd rather just play for fun.
Fair enough.
So, speaking of decks that might do well this weekend, we are going to talk about what did well this past weekend. So, there was a Phantom Legends tournament.
Yeah, and the Phantom Legends tournament is a 16-person invite-only arena tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Swiss format until elimination rounds. I mean, similar to really any tournament. It is invite-only, so basically you have to have hit a certain level on arena, platinum, to at least qualify or be invited, and it's the top 16 players. There were two events on the weekend, and if your name was Brian Gottlieb, you did exceptionally well. So he, I believe it was Thursday, the Thursday event, he won with Esper Control, and then the next event he got second, losing to two-time world champion Shahar Shenhar, who was playing Simic Aggro. He was playing the Golos Ramp deck.
He was playing Golos Ramp.
Yeah. In the first event he was playing, that he won with, he was playing Esper Doom.
Oh, is that the Doom Foretold?
Yes.
Okay, so I did play against that once, not on the play any deck event, but that card's really good if you can't get rid of it. I was like, no, I don't have another thing to get rid of.
It's so annoying.
I'm out of permanence.
You literally were Doom Foretold, and
I couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
I was doomed. I did end up scooping at the end. I think I had to sack a thing like four different times. I said, well, I am out of answers.
Well, guess what? That is a black control deck because it plays Murderous Rider. Oh, and it's blue white, right up your alley.
But isn't that card black white, or is it playing? Oh, it's playing just
well. Doom
the land
is black white. Yeah, but it's an Esper deck.
Okay, so the first event was won
with Esper Doom, played by Brian Gottlieb, okay, who beat Javier Dominguez.
That's the card that in my intro, the card was based around him. That was his vanity card. First strike and
Fervent Champion.
Fervent Champion.
Yeah. He was playing Bant Planeswalkers, which I know, obviously, Bant is a popular archetype just because Simic is really good colors right now. He was playing four Nissa Who Shake the World, four Oko, Thief of Crowns, four Teferi, Time Raveler, 24 lands, and then 23 creatures. His creatures were one Boreal Grazer, four Gilligoose, four Hydra Crisis, four Leafkin Druid, one Paradise Druid, four Risen Reef, two Voracious Hydra, three Wicked Wolf.
Wicked Wolf's a really good card. I learned that this weekend as well when someone was like, we fight.
We fight and he indestructible.
Yep.
Turns out he wasn't, the three little pigs weren't the only thing he was blown out.
He destroyed my board.
Any removal you had, good game.
Yeah.
So he took like what seemed like the, with this deck, this deck kind of intrigues me a little bit. It was kind of like the old Bant value decks from last standard. And he had like the ramp to back it up with Voracious Hydra. Mm-hmm. It's a very, streamlined deck, which can sometimes be a good or a bad thing. But I think out of the gate, this might also be a good deck to play.
And then in that Golos deck, was there anything or unique about that on?
It was kind of like the Field of the Dead, like mm-hmm. Scapeshift deck, but it just was playing obviously more colors. It was playing Gates.
Oh.
One of each.
Circuitous route to get more Gates.
Yeah. Hold on, let me pull it up again. I mean, Hydra Crisis, and then the Realm Giant, because, you know, it's a 7 mana, but
it, how many of that does it play? I'm curious. That card's really good, and also, it's the creepiest artwork. Have you had that played against you on Arena yet? There's a giant arm that looks like the size of your, it's like the whole screen.
The screen
and it, like,
wipes.
Squishes everything, and then pulls its hand back.
That's fantastic. It'd probably scare the crap out of me at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning.
I had no idea what was happening, and then I realized they were playing the spell part, and it squished everyone. And then it's a 7/7 Vigilance to boot.
Correct.
And they can actually hard cast that because they've ramped so much.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, it plays four of those guys.
Oh, four. Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
So its creatures are four Arboreal Grazer. I know I'm probably mispronouncing that.
No, that's is that the one that is flying? They have to pay to attack you? Is that that one?
No, that's the one when it enters the battlefield, you can put a land from your hand.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, I'm thinking a completely different card.
Four Hydrate Crisis, because why not? That's like best creature in standard, in my opinion. Then for the giant, four Circuitous Route, four Growth Spiral, four Once Upon a Time, four Teferi, and then 28 lands, four Field of the Dead, two Fabled Passage, which I would actually buy into that card.
In real life?
Yeah.
It's pretty good. I mean, have two.
It's almost as good as Prismatic Vista, and that card's $30.
And if you get it late game, it's a untapped Evolving Wilds.
Correct. And you don't have to pay life for it.
Well, you don't pay life for Evolving Wilds. I guess Prismatic Vista.
Well, I was making more Prismatic Vista, but yeah.
Card will be expensive in the future. Just know.
Correct. Yeah. In my opinion, it will be.
And also, in my opinion, that agrees with your opinion.
Well, we're just two opinionated fellows over here.
So I guess those are some of the early results.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see what happens. You know, I don't think the format is necessarily solved, but the format is not officially out in paper yet. So, but with these play any deck events, people are actually getting a shot to play with them before the actual paper set comes out. So, I guess we'll see if maybe this is going to be a standard practice moving forward, on Arena. I said standard practice.
Standardized testing.
I don't like standardized testing, but this is standardized testing, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. I think that it gives them a chance to play with cards that they wouldn't normally play with, especially because it's free.
Well, yeah, and then it gives them an idea of what they want to play, so they don't have to wait till, you know, a Star City or a Grand Prix to determine what they want to play. They can just go out and buy it from week one.
Sure, and if they're a new player, they can figure out what they even like to play for free.
Yeah, everybody says a starter player in red just because it's easiest, quote unquote, but it's just like this gives them an opportunity to, you know, diversify.
And
their
I would
colors.
Argue red is not the easiest. I would say green is easier to learn how to play. My opinion again.
Okay.
If you don't have a ton of shocks and lightning strikes and bolts, it's not that easy of a format, especially right now where we're dealing with what's the mono red creature that gets counters on it when you cast a red spell?
Runaway
Steamkin. When you're playing a deck like that, where you have to sequence the spells to then remove the three counters to cast more spells, I would say that's much more difficult than a just mono green Nissa Who Shakes the World ramp deck right now.
Right.
That's,
I tap my force deck, get an Underforest.
Yeah. Or yeah. On turn one, I play a Dork. On turn two, I play another one. And then on turn three, I play Nissa Who Shakes the World and I untap my lands. I hope I win. That's much easier to sequence, in my opinion, than it is to do a mono red deck right now.
Sure.
But
sure.
I think it gives people a...
What do you mean, new people?
It gives new people to the game a better chance of figuring out what they like and not having to play only decks that are made up of commons and uncommons because you're out of wild cards and don't want to spend $500 to unlock those wild cards.
Yeah, and that's a secret blessing of Arena, because, you know, we'd always get like kids or whatever who would show up and buy a starter deck and want to play instantly and then just get hopes and dreams crushed and not want to play anymore. Now this gives them a chance to, okay, now I can figure out what I want to play by myself, you know.
Right. And those decks, I don't think those intro decks are good to take to an FNM. You definitely need to improve them significantly. However, they did have those decks that we had, I think it was during Kaladesh block, where they had those that were like the FNM style decks where they actually were pretty good. And then they redid them. What are those?
The Challenger decks.
The Challenger decks, right. Yeah. We used to have the event decks. Then they took the
rebranded.
Rebranded.
Yep.
Those are much more up the alley of what I think this is helping people to do right off the bat.
Yeah, this last year's one was really good. Like the mono red deck was.
That had Arc Light Phoenix and some stuff too, right? Or is that the?
That was the blue red one.
That was the blue red.
Is it one?
Oh, the one with Hazoret in it. Is that the one you're talking about?
That was 2 years ago. Those.
All right, so I'm wrong twice. Third time's a charm.
This past year there was green black. Is it mono red? What's the fourth?
What was
one?
I thought it was
blue white.
What was in the mono red one?
It was literally just the mono red deck.
Oh.
Minus it didn't have Rekindling Phoenix and Risk Factor.
But it had Goblin Chain Whirler, didn't it?
It had Goblin Chain Whirler.
Okay, I remember this. It's all coming back.
It had Runaway Steamkin and Experimental Frenzy.
Yeah, you had some good staples there to kind of just start out with.
Yeah, you basically had the entire mono red deck just minus a few couple sideboard cards.
Yeah, minus a few sideboard and the actual just redundancy of having play sets of some of them.
Yeah, so those actually boosted our FNM numbers. Just
did it?
Yeah, because kids can, you know, here's $20-$30, whatever it was, and I can actually play a decent standard deck, so.
Right. Well, I'm interested to see where the format goes in the future. Obviously, I'm sure we'll see some stuff pretty quick.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be a slower format.
Yep.
Timely spells, timely sequencing would be important.
Yeah. So we'll check back in after this weekend and see what everybody or how everybody did, and we'll see how each other did on the Win Every Card event. But I think that's it we have for this week. Is there anything else that we did not cover? Oh, you know what? One thing is Command Fest Chicago is coming up in the next couple of weeks. I will be there. I know, Brian, you're not able to make it. It was too short notice.
Yeah.
So
sad.
If you're there, feel free to come find me. I'll talk a little bit more about that as we're getting closer. So that is the weekend of November 1st through November 3rd. So I will be there playing some Commander. They've got a ton of events, Two-Headed Giant. There is a sort of a sealed kind of event, and I have to look up some more details on it, but it looks like they're trying to explore some other options of Commander along with some of the constructed types of formats we have today, but bringing them into the format of Commander.
Awesome.
They'll likely do very well with that. And I know that the same weekend, there's also Command Fest Seattle. And then a little bit after that, there's
Washington
Command Fest DC.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this is the first time. So I'm going for the first. We'll see how it goes. I'm assuming there'll be a lot of turnout. Chicago's a huge city. It's pretty central to a lot of areas. So, if you like Commander, come hang out. But that's it. So, if you would like to contact us, you can find our podcast on Twitter at Guardian Pod. You can find me at AT Flory.
And me at Ballerman Cometh.
Also, take a look for hashtag Guardian Project Pod to find our posts and episodes. We do like to hear from you, so send along your comments and any topics you'd like us to talk about, and we'll go over them on the next episode. And then you can also email us at guardianprojectpod@gmail.com. And that's about it.
Signing off. Bye.
See ya. All four already. Nice. Which ones worked already? Pod bean or whatever. Beans.
Beans.
Tune in, tune in. Did that one go?
No, that one didn't, weirdly. That one, tune in and Stitcher are the ones that didn't. That's whatever.
Okay, those are the two important ones. That's probably why, because we're like, no, we have to check your quality before you come onto our platform.